Hello.
I think an explosion would be very cool. Like, we just started with explosion.
I'm pro explosion as long as it's not Iranian school children getting blown up. Thanks everyone for joining us. You're watching Deprogram with Ted Rall and Jamal Thomas. I'm still getting used to saying that. Different Jay. Thanks so much for joining us. We are here normally Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, but today is a Wednesday, and on Mondays and Wednesdays, we do a supplemental Q&A, Ask Us Anything show at 12 noon. This is that show. So we look forward to your comments, your questions, especially your Super Chats and your Rumble rants, because those are what help make the show possible. We are very, very much looking forward to hearing all of your comments and to discussing with you. We were having some interesting convo, the three of us, before. And, that reminds me, I'm going to go see if I see any ads currently.
Let's
this topic. All right.
I was going to say, if you look for the ad, I was going to tell them what we were talking about.
Okay. I'm looking for the ad, but go ahead.
Okay. So when we were talking about Rumble Studio, because I'm trying to get better at using it, because if I can get rid of the money that I'm making. But, is it a cell phone?
No, believe it or not, I'm getting a troll, one of those Telegram troll ladies calling. Like one of the fake Asian girls.
Uh-huh.
Go away, Guo Dai.
I'm Guo Dai from Guangdong. So we were talking about the thing, and when I got off of Rumble Studio, I saw I was bitching at Robbie basically about Rumble Studio, and I was making the point of saying when I got off Rumble Studio, one of the ads that pop up, because for Rumble Studio you have to have a minimum number of people watching in order to refer to an ad. Usually it would be something like you need 300-600 people in order to get a really big advertisement. It was an ad from a guy, I think Lev Horton, about Israel for 10 people for $300. That is astonishing. And it's like, it was saying something like boycott divestment syndrome. The people are horrible. The terrorists. Israel is great. We're doing great things, blah, 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 blah. Basically a pro-Israeli ad where they're paying $300 for only 10 people. That's amazing. So much money. Think of the money. When you're thinking of Thomas Massey race, and you're thinking like, they spent $20 million. And then you look at stuff like this. It's like, yeah, so much money.
Yeah, they're washing cash.
It's not available. I'm sure that we have got flagged.
We're probably, our metrics are probably like, don't give it to those three rascals. I'm sure they have different words than rascals.
Yeah. Israel, we love you.
We think you're cute. We think you're
awesome.
Funny. You're bunny soft. We love you.
I want to live under your Noahide laws, and you're just tell you how great you are.
No apartheid state at all. You guys are treat everyone so respectfully and equally. Not an apartheid state.
All right,
at all.
So right here, the screen is still up. I haven't took my screen down. A guy named Lev Horton.
All right.
Or no, Hatam or Halom. Nev Halom. I just said something like, buy Israeli, support Israel, bring the Holy Lands home. Now, I'm not going to read the ad because they're not paying me to read this goddamn ad, right? They're going to give me $300. But those are the campaign details. So you have to read the whole thing. Every box we send carries their courage and their love across the world.
So I see two of them, one from Lev Holman, the one that you're talking about.
Uh-huh.
And they've got one that's called Wise Money Israel.
Yeah, but Wise Money Israel is only paying 54 cents. So we're like,
that's it?
Yeah, fuck
it. You got to pay me more than that. I need more than that.
Yeah, I don't see where it's
available. Price, but it's not 54 cents.
I don't see where it's available. The only ad that I see on my box here is for Rumble Wallet.
Because it says available. It says May 20 ongoing. Minimum viewers 10. And it says payout 300. And it says something max payment 100 or something like that.
And we've got the requisite followers, so it's that's not the problem.
Oh, for sure.
And then there's Rumble Wallet. To give the audience perspective, Rumble Wallet, May 20th, minimum viewers 300 for the amount of $204. So the Israeli one is paying $300 for 10 people. Rumble Wallet is paying $200 for 300 people. I'm trying to give you scale and context on how outlandish that number is. That's amazing.
All right. Robbie, go find us some questions.
Okay. But, I'm already putting them up. You're not paying attention. I'm going to show this, though, to JT.
I'm the person not paying attention. Okay.
Yeah, because JT, how you said that you weren't seeing the super chats or the rants?
Yeah.
I just dropped one over in Telegram. I have no idea. You are looking in the wrong spot because they all show up right there under the chat
box. I see them too.
By the way, that could be true. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying as a flat fact, I can see it.
All right, here we go. First question off to the races. Skylowski, 9268 JT. You said earlier you were sexually abused as a kid, and that stood out to me. I've been in therapy for over a decade. I'm 24, and I'm now just working through trauma. How do we move forward?
I felt nothing.
I'm sorry, this continues. My apologies. In a country like this, how do we have hope as survivors and victims? How do you work through a trauma that deep and now is reignited through the files?
It wasn't, I had no feelings about it. I knew it wasn't my fault. If anything, I think I experienced it more as rage, but trauma, no. I just had no feelings. It was just kind of like, it is what it is, what it is. I mean, by the way, when I was diagnosed with kidney failure, it was the same way. It was just kind of like, this thing happened. Okay. And then something else will happen, right? I didn't internalize it. It wasn't, to me, this overwhelming, life-changing thing that a lot of people make it out to be. And so I'm not denying the person's experience, or even I'm not denying the person's trauma. I don't think I experienced it. Obviously, it's traumatic, but it's not. But it was just an event, if that makes sense. It's a material thing that happens. How you interpret it is a little bit different. I didn't put it on me as blame. I didn't do anything wrong. And so it wasn't a fault in that case. Mm-hmm. It was more directed at that motherfucker did it. I mean, mind, he's in prison. Not for that, for other shit. But that was the way I experienced it, just as I am perfectly okay with whatever happens to that motherfucker.
Have you ever experienced trauma at all?
Yes.
About other things?
When I was stuck in the hospital all of that time and didn't get payments, that was traumatic. Because that was pain. And it was consistent, ongoing, with other people on some level being responsible for not dealing with it. And looking at you as you're alone, as if, this person is pain-seeking. This person is just making it up. This person is just, you know. And then find out a year later, well, I wasn't making it up. There was an abscess that was there that you guys ignored that was being exacerbated by the transplant. It was that. That was traumatic to me. Like, that shit stuck. Like, where there's rage. And the way I deal with the medical profession changed from that point on, realizing you're by yourself, you got to deal with this shit. And you have boundaries that, regardless of the situation, would not be breached. Yeah, for me, that was traumatic. The other thing was a bad thing happened. It was just kind of that. It didn't stick with me, emotionally anyway. I'm odd on this stuff. I get it. I'm odd on this stuff. Like, again, my doctor told me one day, he says, when I told you you had kidney failure, you're the only person that didn't have a response to it. Meaning, to be fair, I didn't know what it meant, right? It's like somebody tells you some life-changing shit at 17. And it's kind of like, okay, what does life mean to a 17-year-old? What does that mean as you move through the course of a life? It was too big to kind of accommodate, but it wasn't trauma. It was just a thing that happened. You just move on forward from the thing that happened and focus on the objectives going forward. It's, you know, like, I get it. Your emotions are what they are. They don't have to be corralled, that stuff. And in the case of somebody who experiences something like that when they're a kid, that shit can leave scars, especially depending upon how they look at it. I get it. Yeah, and it, but that's an emotional thing, if that makes sense.
And I guess the way I read this person's question is also in context of the, you know, it's, you know, the, it seems like we live in a society where a lot of people are willing to not only turn the other way, but actively cover up this kind of, you know, rape. So, and that hurts. It seems personal. It probably feels like, you know, your government hates you, or at bare minimum doesn't care about you.
But that's true. That's an honest reflection of reality to me. It's just acknowledging reality.
And that's hard to accept, I think, for a lot of, especially for a younger person. I mean, this person's 24.
I know, but there's a lot of hardship to accept. That's just life. Like, I mean, and God, man, I'm not trying to minimize this at all. And maybe I'm old and gristled at 48. That may be the entire time to accept that.
Could be.
There is a lot of hardship to, when your wife is saying she's leaving, that is a hard thing to accept. She ain't got a choice, right? Like, there's all sorts of hard shit to accept. It is, our government are run by lunatics. They are hateful, evil, disgusting people. That is the system to which we are stuck with.
Yeah, and you know, there are people listening to you who might be thinking, it sucks to be so cynical, but I would totally disagree. I think it sucks to not see things clearly.
Right. How can you maneuver if you don't see the world clearly?
Mm-hmm.
That's just true. I don't have to like it, but yeah. I do have to acknowledge it if I'm going to move forward. It's like, what's the first thing for alcoholics, right? I am an alcoholic.
Yeah.
I have no power over alcoholism.
It's accepting that you have a problem, right? That's the first step. John Park the First, Ted, you talked about working for JFK Jr. and George Magazine in one of the membership videos you and John did. What was it like, and would you still be there? Did you like it? Love the show, guys. Well, of course, George died, as did so many other magazines. Okay, so to be honest, George Magazine sucked. It was a crappy piece of shit magazine. It was the 90s. There was this whole spate of kind of like soft politics coming out of like the Clinton years that manifested in things like Tina Brown's Talk magazine and her iteration of the New Yorker, and then George Magazine. And the thing is, it was like soft-pedaled. It was dumb. I'm a left-wing radical. You know, I mean, I would like, to me, I would rather work at some place like Jacobin, although frankly, it's to my right. You know, it's really just sort of a hard liberal magazine. It's kind of DSA-y, right? That's about it. But I'd much rather work someplace like that or you know, just give me a serious job at some place like Foreign Affairs and let me just write my shit and be intellectual. I was flattered because, look, I was hot shit back then in the late 90s. I mean, I was all over the place. I was in... Pardon?
You still are.
Oh, thank you. But I was in 140 papers. You know, print media was still going. Not going strong, but going. I was in Time, Forbes, Fortune. And so when I got the call, you know, I was getting calls from all over the place. I mean, I was in Silicon Valley Alley Reporter. I got a call from George and they, you know, I was hot shit. Like, hey, will you draw cartoons for us? Sure. The fun part was going to a party at the restaurant on top of Bloomingdale's and meeting, which is for George, and meeting JFK Jr. He was shy and he was off in a corner and no one was talking to him. It's been one of my experiences that the celebrity at the party is often a person that nobody wants to talk to because he's the celebrity and everyone's scared to talk to him. So, you know, I had a little liquid courage. I went over and talked to him. He was the nicest guy, incredibly handsome, and like much better looking in person. He was not photogenic, actually, right? So that's how good looking he was. It was kind of shocking. But anyway, he was very real. He was very kind. He was not very intelligent. And, you know, he was okay. He wasn't like, you know, going to swallow his own tongue like the guy who beat Massey this morning. But he was like, you know, just like a, he was a normal person, kind of as normal as could possibly be given the circumstances. How was it? It's an awkward situation when you're like, well, I'm going to go do some, I'm going to submit some cartoons. They're going to be watered down and turned into pablum, but I'm going to be paid well. And people who matter, quote, TM, are going to see them. I don't miss that feeling. I miss the money, if that makes any sense. All right. John D. Cockefeller, dollar. Any intention to get merch? That could be a good way to support the show. I'd 100% buy a Trump 47th chromosome, Chairman Rawl, War of Clovis aggression shirt to support the fellers. Well, we were literally, us and Trent, who's doing the merch designs, we're literally just scheming and plotting about this yesterday. Merch is on the way, is the fair way to put it, right?
Yeah, it is, but it'll only be on YouTube. And the reason for it is, one of the ways that YouTube is better than Rumble is that Rumble has a partnership with some company I won't even bother naming because it's a joke. You have to buy your own stuff at full price before you can sell it, which is completely retarded. So our merch store will be over on YouTube. So you will be able to find it all there. So deprogram.live. You'll be able to find it there, or just go to YouTube and click on any of our videos. And the link will be right there in the show notes.
Let me check with Trent to find out what the timeline is for that stuff. But we should at least have one t-shirt ready to go within a week, I would think, but we'll see.
Yeah. We're also working on your book.
That's true. Yep. And, yeah, I'm not going to give anything away because it's too good. It's too good to tease. All right, here we go. Okay, more great questions here. Okay, Tyler Ferry, what do you guys think of a Massey 28 run? He won hearts and minds nationally, especially young people, and the right is yearning for someone not MAGA or AIPAC money. I will put Robbie in for that.
Run him with Tucker Carlson. 100%. You have those two running, you got to fight.
Was that for me?
No, it wasn't for you. No, it was not for you, Siri. Shut up. No, I'm telling you right now. I mean, no, Tucker Carlson is like enemy number one for the Israel lobby. I mean, to the point that he's had to hire his own personal security because of all the death threats coming in. Like that is not hyperbole. That's not something that I'm making up. That's something I know is a statement of fact. And I mean, the man is hated by the Israel First crowd.
Okay, sure, but you know, the question here is for a run that has to win both Republicans and Democrats, right?
Like and that's what you're able to do, because now hear me out. Now, you're not going to win Democrats, just like you, Ted Rawl. If you ran, I would vote for you, but Republicans never will because you're a communist. Well, okay. And then you can make the argument.
There's a lot of people like you.
No, I understand there's a lot of people like me, but the question is going to be,
as I voted in 2016 and it made a huge difference.
That's the point that I'm making. So if you're able to unite the populist wings, let's just say of the left and the right for just normal English, right? You're going to win because that by definition is the independent vote. And so if you're able to run on, you don't have to make it complicated. Are you better off now than what you were 4 or 8 years ago? Are you really interested in having your kids go fight and die on the other side of the world for a war that, never mind, that Congress didn't even vote for? If that's the argument that you're able to make, you win.
Okay, so here's the thing.
And Tucker's got money. Massey doesn't.
Thomas Massey can run. Tucker Carlson can run. Tucker Carlson probably has a better shot than Thomas Massey because of name recognition. But Thomas Massey is not well known nationally, does not have national name recognition, particularly among no one to the right of it, to the left of Attila the Hun knows who he is. He's all part of like the split within the GOP. I don't think there's a chance in hell that either of these two guys could be president because they're boxed in with their right-wing political positions on so many issues that there are, and you know, you're talking about, they've been aligned voting, well, not Tucker Carlson, but they've been aligned with people like Donald Trump, who is wildly unpopular now. I mean, you know, I don't know what the magic mix is for 2028, assuming we get to have an election. But I do know it's not going to be an ideologue from, you know, someone who is viewed as part of Trump world. Massey is viewed as part of Trump world.
I know. And you know who else was? Tucker Carlson. Tucker Carlson went out and actively campaigned for the man.
President.
But here's the thing, though. Tucker Carlson is able to do something that no one else in the public sphere is able to, has done, at least not to my knowledge.
Campaign?
He's apologized. He has gone on arguably, depending on the metrics that you look, he's even bigger than Joe Rogan, depending on how you look at how you look at the numbers.
My take is, sorry to interrupt, but we've got a lot of questions piled up.
Sure.
My take on this is that the Ross Perot model is what works from an insurgent standpoint, even if you're running inside a party. You have to have a shit ton of money. You've got to create your own narrative with your own money and your advertising, taking it directly to the American people.
And Tucker can do that.
Lots of appearances in public. Tucker Carlson isn't going to be able to get a lot of interviews on 60 Minutes or places like that, right?
He doesn't need them.
He's going to have to buy the advertising. I don't know how much money he actually has, but he's going to have to buy it. And
Trump won in 2016 with his X account.
Trump was.
You do not need old school media.
Following 8 years of Barack Obama, very different environment.
Is the country worse off now, or was it or under Obama? From every metric,
it's worse off now, of course.
Correct. There you go. And then all you have to do is run. If you don't have to run to the right, you don't have to run to the right of Trump. Run to the left of him. So you know, listen. At the end of the day,
neither left nor right. What you should honestly do
is run in the middle.
A bag of policies that you know basically are what you think is right. And where you think the people are or need to be, and make the case and be authentic.
Correct. I agree with both of you. I think both of you are right. I mean, it's hard for people to think that Massey is a Trumpian when Trump hated his guts. Mm-hmm. But at the same token, you might be able to categorize him as that if you're looking at his voting record. But as you pointed out, I don't know how many people really care about the voting record thing. I think you're too right too, Ted, because the reality of it is, both of these parties are hated. And if you had an insurgent candidate with a huge amount of cash, they can make a difference. But I would argue that Robbie is right on the whole internet thing. Trump ran, like he didn't even have personnel on the ground when he first started this campaign. Mm-hmm. And he came up shooting like a rocket. And part of it is because they thought he was an outsider. They thought it was like, this guy's not a Republican. He doesn't act like him, he doesn't look like him. That's what we want. We want something different.
He went after the Republicans. When I decided Trump was my guy, was in 2016 on that stage when he crucified Jeb in South Carolina.
Right. Oh, it was beautiful.
Yeah.
That's like, this is my guy.
I recognize that as a magic moment, even though I did not vote for him.
Same here. And so I guess that's my point, right? Like, there is something to be said about an insurgent candidate, but I agree with Ted on this. An outsider that says, here are the policies that I'm going to run with. And it's something that the public agrees with and organizes around, especially if it's insurgent. Like it's something radically different than what both political
parties are. Something like Huey Long.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or as you point out, Ross Perot. Mm-hmm. But obviously from my point of view, somebody on the left.
Now, Massey's biggest mistake that he made was refusing to go out against Trump and condemn him for being the scum-sucking hypocrite that he was and keep on trying to play kissy face with him.
Yeah.
Tucker Carlson, I don't know if either one of you ever watched the guy. He called Trump, all but called him the Antichrist. He apologized for campaigning for him. He called him a disgrace, a failure. He called him a traitor to the movement. I mean, Tucker is not playing this game. And then you got Randy Fine, that fat pig from Florida, that slob. Just going out saying, this is Trump's Republican Party. We just get to be a part of it. To which case, I said, you can fucking have it. That's not what we want. Okay, we want to burn it all down.
Yes, Robbie, you're making a mistake that I've made many times in the past, which is assuming that most voters are up on the news, that they follow the news the way we do, that they have the time to do so, the interest to do so, and that they know what's going on. Most voters don't know anything about Tucker Carlson other than he used to wear a bow tie. And they just don't know about the apology. They don't know about the fact that this is a man that has exhibited these signs of integrity that you respect and that I also respect.
But you don't need that because you know what everyone has. I'm gonna give everyone here a visual aid. Everyone in the United States has one of these. You got a credit card or a debit card. No one, unless you're in the millionaire class, is better off now than what you were. Forget 4 years ago, 8 years ago, 12 years ago. No one's better off. No one is better off. No one is looking out for you.
Yeah, but the point is you're looking for who is the person. You look at Tucker Carlson, you're like, suspender wearing, bow tie wearing, billionaire, heir to the Swanson frozen foods fortune.
Yeah, in which case.
Is that man like, does he care about Ted Rall, Robbie West, and Jamarl Thomas? I'm like.
Well, you know that the incumbent doesn't, so take a chance. That's why I voted for Trump. I knew that Hillary Clinton was jonesing for a war against Russia.
People took
it. I 100% knew that. I also understood that there's this guy, this real estate dude, who was in his own autistic kind of way telling the truth, like, why are we in NATO? Why are we doing all these stupid wars? With no political experience, who was honest enough to say what everyone else was thinking at the time. And I was like, I'm going to vote for this guy. I don't know if he can do it or not, but I know what the alternative is going to be.
He's a dog who caught a car. This Correct. Time it's going to take more, I think. Let's keep going here. Okay. Thanks very much, Sam Palmisano, for the very generous $20. Did y'all see the former Google CEO getting booed at graduation for bringing up AI and Mark Zuckerberg laying off 6,000 employees through a video call? I thought it was 600, but point taken.
Wait. He fired 600 people in a video call?
Seems like the unemployment rate will go crazy this year. By the way, it's so funny because there's an episode of Succession where the CEO does something stupid like that by Zoom. It's like, all right, if you're on this call, you no longer work here. Gather your things and leave.
Wow.
Well, I guess if you're firing 6,000 people at once, you're not going to be able to do it in an auditorium, right? Especially if they don't all work at home. I thought I did see, take note of the graduation speech booing of AI. I mean, look, if you're 21 years old and you're graduating out into this world, which has very high unemployment in your age group, and you see that AI is being championed by the billionaire class and by their pet politicians, you've got to be pissed. You're literally like, you don't know what to do. I mean, most of the job listings are fake. You go to LinkedIn, they're bots. They're like trying to like figure out what the market is. They're not like actually hiring anyone, which, by the way, should be illegal. If you get caught posting an ad and you don't actually have an opening, you should be arrested and sent to prison.
Agreed.
But because you're wasting people's time and you're driving, it's just that's unconscionable. Okay, but like, yeah, if you're 21, by the way, the revolution, if it's coming, is coming from Gen Z. They are going to be, they're smart enough, they're real enough, and they get it.
And they're screwed.
That's right. They're in pain.
And they're in pain. And they know what ails them, and they've identified it, and they're not wrong.
It's the pain that makes the difference. Mm-hmm. I would argue it's pain that makes you know your life, right? In their specific case, though, it's the pain. Like, meaning they're booing the guy for AI. Okay, well, AI is going to happen. It just is. There is a fiscal incentive for it to exist. If Jeff Bezos doesn't have to pay workers, that is just that much more money for Jeff Bezos. Yeah. The incentive built into the process, right? However, there is a political process that is their resolution for it. And if they are hurt enough, they're in pain enough, they're angry enough, then they may, as you point out, they may be the generation that changes it because they have to. Whereas we were too complacent. We could still benefit off of this stuff. The younger generation, they're going to be the first to go.
I mean, yesterday on our call, I was showing y'all what I'm building right here in the living room, right here in the office here in my apartment. I could not handle all the clients that I'm doing right now if I was not building my own AI system. So I'm not firing anybody, but I'm also not hiring anybody because I can't. I don't have unlimited capital. So how am I addressing the issue? I'm building an AI model.
And the people who, but the thing is, so the thing about this technology, and I wish I'd come up with this idea myself, but I didn't. It was my feminism professor at Barnard who taught me this. But basically these, the hard technology, the hardware technology, like, I mean, it, you know, like, well, AI is now software, right? But I mean, well, it's, but hardware technology and now software, the profits, you know, we basically are left behind if we don't use them. If you don't adapt, well, your competitors will, and they'll, right, and they'll eat you for lunch, and you have to. Like right now, in editorial cartooning, the rates per cartoon keep dropping, right? Well, so what's the logical conclusion? The conclusion is to continue to be able to pay my bills, I need to create AI and do cartoons in AI in my style, and and do multiple cartoons a day instead of multiple cartoons a week. And then I'll be able to keep my head above water. If I don't do that, I'll be sleeping outside soon, right? So it's just, but the thing is, it's sort of like that becomes the standard. It'll become like in the old days, it used to be like, well, you have to do 3 cartoons a week in order to make a living as a cartoonist. In the future, it'll be like, well, now you have to do 3 cartoons a day to make a living as a cartoonist. It's sort of like in the early days of the vacuum cleaner. The vacuum cleaner was introduced to housewives as a way to make life easier. Keep your, now you'll be able to save hours on sweeping and mopping. You won't have to do that anymore. Your house will be so much cleaner. This machine will take care of it. And what happened was that was true. But then a higher standard of cleanliness then evolved from that. It used to be okay in 1885 to go visit someone's house and, you know, hey, there's some blades of grass on the floor. But now it's like everything's expected to have white wall-to-wall carpeting glistening clean from your beautiful power vac and maybe power vacuum that you do and maybe shampoo periodically. The standards have risen. Does the housewife make additional money or does the house husband make additional money? No. But Hoover and all the companies, Miele, all the companies that make vacuum cleaners make money. That's the same thing. I mean, you know, the tech lords will make money from AI. We won't. We have to use it. If we don't, we're fucked. This is, by the way, one of the appealing aspects of a state economy is that, you know, the Politburo can just say, American worker should not have to do this. We will put AI on back burner. We have controlled economy. It is good. American worker should not work too hard. I mean, you know.
But then though, what happens when the fourth competitor, like say China, who doesn't have that net, goes in and eats your lunch and destroys you.
Right there.
That is
right
the problem. There.
I know, but it shouldn't. But it's a political problem. The AI is not the issue. The companies aren't the issue. I want my companies making AI. I want them, you know, making technology that makes certain jobs obsolete. The issue
Brother,
is
I'm
political.
Building one.
And by the way, as you point out, other countries, meaning we're in constant competition with other countries. I would love if the world was cooperative. It's not. I want companies and whatnot doing it. The issue is political. The issue is, hey, how do you distribute funds in a way that compensates people for the jobs that are being lost? Or how do you create new jobs in your economy to accommodate people who are not necessarily necessary for the AI thing? How can I say this? If you look at everything that needs to be done in this country that nobody is responsible for, and it's supposed to be responsible, but we don't really get involved, from the standpoint of streets, from the standpoint of keeping food cheap, such as like industrial greenhouses, think of all the things that government can employ people to do that makes the country better. I'm okay with AI taking jobs if there are other jobs to compensate for it. I'm even okay with governments giving people those jobs so they can do stuff to the benefit of the country paid for by the extra productivity that AI gets into. I'll make my point. It's political. The issue is not technology. Technology is going to happen regardless. And if we don't use it, somebody else will. The issue is how do you deal with the technology in the displacement that's created by that technology. Tell me if you agree or disagree to it.
I totally agree. I totally agree. We should keep going because we have more questions. Peter Ive, thanks so much for the $5. A few days ago, you both mentioned you'd been to Indonesia. Did either of you get to the Borobudur Buddhist temple when you were there. It was restored by my grandfather. Wow. 115 years ago.
Did I get to the temple? I don't know. In fact, I know I didn't get to the temple. I was in Jakarta, and I stayed in Jakarta for 2 months. But I was living in Jakarta. I wasn't really traveling, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I didn't get to Java. I was in Bali. So, you know.
Oh, you went to the Ribcage. Oh, I bet that was nice.
It was nice. It was real nice. I was very, very lucky. I had just bought a house in the Hamptons, and I hadn't moved in yet. And then a realtor's like, hey, would you like to rent out your house for Hamptons prices, you know, before you move in? And I'm like, yeah, I think it's like, and basically it was like, you'll have to fuck off for like basically 12 weeks. I'm like, I can fuck off. I could work from anywhere in the world. I'll just go. So I went to Bali, and it was $50 a day to live.
That's
in Bali.
It.
It was the airfare was $1,400, but it was like, you know, definitely made me being away well worth it. It was a really fun, cool. Every morning I got up and went swimming in the ocean, and then like worked on the terrace of my house, my rental apartment that was on the side of a cliff overlooking a surfer beach, Uluwatu. Amazing. Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Bali was nice.
That is very nice.
Highly recommend it. Okay. Thanks so much for the $20, Sam Palsano. I'm an accounting graduate entering the Big Four. Congrats. During my internship, a higher up claimed that since AI hasn't replaced us yet, it probably won't ever.
Well, he's out of his mind.
The dumbest thing I've heard from management.
You're out of his mind.
LOL.
Yeah, I was a software engineer, and I built systems that replaced people, and it wasn't even AI.
Oh, sure.
Meaning the company could have said, hey, you three are no longer necessary because the system is in operation. Like they didn't do it, thankfully. But that's on a low level. I mean, that's...
Yeah, video always kills the radio star. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's so like prima facie ridiculous. I don't even know what to say. Frank Feel, 7254, thanks so much for the $5. How to get people to stop voting for Republicans and Democrats? Is there a way?
Yes.
I'm always struggling with getting people not to vote for Democrats. And here's my big argument against it, right? Well, I have a main argument and a supplemental argument, a corollary. My main argument is that if you want anything different in the future ever, you have to start supporting something different now. You have to vote for something different now. You have to pay, you have to donate to something now. You have to canvas for something now. It's like if you want, otherwise, you're just going to keep getting the same thing election after election. I mean, how many times, JT, have you heard election after election? Well, you know, third party is a good idea. The Greens are a good idea. But this election, the most important election that could ever be an election, is right now. And we can't take a chance. We can't let the Republicans win. And they say that every fucking single time. And everybody believes it. And then, the Democrats never, ever, ever do shit, even when they do come and get into power. And the point is, you have to build these. But my corollary argument is the Democratic and the Republican parties were not created by God. They started out as small third parties, right? And they emerged and they were built and they organized. And so if you ever want something new, you got to support for it. Now, okay, that wasn't the question. The question is, like, how do we convince people to do that? The answer to that is, if I fucking knew, I would do it. I don't know. I've been working on it for years. Obviously, people like me, we've all failed. The Greens, Libertarians, those of us who just don't, you know, people are going to keep doing this. I mean, clearly they're going to keep doing it. I wish I was wrong, but I don't see a way out of the two-party trap other than to just see the whole system collapse.
We are doing it now in the same way that the people who built the civil rights movement did it the first few years of the movement, if that makes sense. Meaning they were all necessary for a mechanical process to come to its conclusion. That's the way I look at it. There is no way to stop people from doing that. They do it when the system is so discredited. Like where it's like where you can't even hide from the fact that it's discredited. It's like a marriage. It's like you're with this other person. And it may go a very long time where you hate this person and you just don't divorce. And I'm not saying that was my case. I don't hate my ex-wife. But I'm just saying, like, you will do everything in your power to keep that thing together very often. And it's only when it finally hits a limit where you're like, okay, staying in this is more painful than it is to change the situation and get a divorce. As painful as divorce is, staying here is worse.
This is just it's like Che Guevara said on guerrilla warfare. He said, as long as people feel that there is any hope in the electoral system to address their needs, any hope at all, they will not violently overthrow the regime.
Yes.
And that's exactly where we are.
Yeah, I think that's where we are. And I think shows like this, the internet in general, in regards to allowing people to have content like this, no people getting louder about this is a problem. These people are psychopaths. I mean, for God's sake, the American public watched the entirety, for the most part, of their governmental structure do everything in their power to defend pedophiles. That is astonishing. And that position, by the way, me pointing that out, it's not an outside point of view. That's just the point of view. Like, meaning when you're looking at the polling and they're looking at this, like, how on earth are you guys defending this? Like, stuff like that is radically discrediting to a political body, that, like, having this kind of naked aggression, again, radically discrediting, having candidate after candidate promise stuff and lie openly. I'm going to legalize marijuana. We're going to make sure people get $15 an hour minimum wage. I'm going to stop the wars. Okay, how many of these, right, needs to take place before people finally come to the assessment? This doesn't work.
Little breaking news, by the way, that's more appalling. The USA Today is reporting exclusively that the Department of Justice has a sealed secret indictment ready to go against former Cuban President Raul Castro, 94 years old, in conjunction with that 1996 shoot down of the anti-Castro Miami-based group Brothers to the Rescue. That was invading Cuban airspace in 1996 when they were shot down. And so little Marco is ready to send big Raul to the clink. Maybe he can share a cell with the former president and first lady of Venezuela.
So when I said these people are evil psychopaths, that's not me being cynical. That's me being realist, because it was John Helmer who pointed that out. He was like, look, you're not being cynical, you're just being a realist. Yeah. And I was like, hey, you're right. I don't think cynicism is a political point of view. Like, if the clock is always at 12, then the clock is always at 12. That's not you being politically savvy. That's just you taking a cynical thing. Realist is different. I can come to a different assessment. I can give people the benefit of the doubt. I could, you know, so.
Yeah, the thing is, yeah, when there's a doubt.
Right, yeah, when there's a doubt. That's
all
the
right.
catch.
So let's see. A bunch of good questions here, so I really want to get to them. Sorry. Thanks so much for the $10, GV man. This never gets reported in the USA, but many people here in Europe think Trump is going to stage an attack and then invoke Article 5 for some dumb war. I don't know how likely that is. Not really a question. Sorry.
They think Trump is going to stage an attack. Oh, they mean like a false flag and then attack Russia.
Right. I'm not a big believer in false flags, but what do you think?
I'm a believer in false flags. I do think false flags happen.
Give me an example.
So a lot of people use the Strait of Hormuz as one. Basically, and by false flag, I also mean things that didn't exist, but making it like it, you know, as a real thing.
Isn't that just a pretext, though?
Yeah, it's a pretext. It's basically creating a pretext.
Same thing as a pretext.
Why do you think those are different?
Well, I mean, a pretext would be, for example, oh, Iraq has WMDs when they don't. But it's just a lie.
Right.
But right. False flag would be like 9/11 happens and we say it was Iran when it wasn't.
But see, even that's not really a false flag. That's okay, so false flag, I'm thinking, for example, the burning of the...
It would be like we carry out an attack and then we say it's Iran, right?
Yes, like burning of the Reichstag, for example.
Well, that's not a good example because it really was a Dutch anarchist. Like, he really did it. That was a pretext. I mean, it's like 9/11.
That was a pretext. So you don't believe in any circumstance that a country will do something and then blame somebody else for it?
I think it's obviously highly theoretically possible. I don't know that it's actually ever happened. I mean, I'm going to bring in Robbie. Robbie might have some.
Wait, what about the U.S.? The U.S. and Spain. What is the Cinco de Lusitania?
Okay, well, that's a good example. Remember the what was it?
You mean the Maine?
The Maine. Oh, thank you. Remember the Maine.
That was a false flag, though. That was a provocation. Basically, that was an excuse.
It was the boiler exploded. It was an accident.
I know, but they that wasn't a false flag, but they used it as an excuse to go back.
It organically happened. The event happened, right? Like Operation Northwoods. The theory of it is that's a false flag.
That's a false flag. Yeah.
Although it never happened, they never carried it out.
But hold on.
Hold on one second. I am getting you some. So in 1939, the Gischwitz incident, where Nazi operatives disguised themselves as Polish soldiers, attacked a German radio station and left a body behind.
1939.
Yep. That's possible. The Mukden incident in 1931. This one I was thinking of when this is the Marco Polo Bridge incident. When an explosion on the Japanese-controlled railway was used as a pretext, and the explosion was set off by Japanese soldiers.
And the Katyn massacre, right, of the of the Polish intellectuals and the Home Army, the Soviets did it, and they blamed Nazi Germany.
Yep, and the big one is the Lavon Affair, 1954. I'll be called anti-Semitic pointing this out, in which Israeli agents were involved in bombings in Egypt that were meant to be blamed on other groups.
Yeah, so it happens. I guess my point is it happens.
I mean, they're rare. Not
often, yeah.
True. But I guess what they're concerned about is because of the tension that the CIA may do something that provokes a response, like meaning that sets off a chain reaction. That's their concern. Will Trump be that guy? I don't know. I got to be honest. I would be more concerned about the Europeans doing some stupid shit like that.
Oh, here's one for you, Ted. So
might be one.
The operation against Saint-Nazaire in 1942, when British commandos used a disguised explosive-laden vessel to attack a German-occupied harbor. I don't really know if that would be considered a false flag, though, because they were already at war. It wasn't a pretext to start the war.
That's not a false flag.
No, that was just deception.
Nord Stream 2, though, I mean, you know, that was undoubtedly the U.S. Navy. I wouldn't say undoubtedly, but I think...
Yeah, but that wasn't really a false flag. That didn't really start a war.
No, but the U.S. claimed it was Russia that blew up their own landmine.
Yeah, but
they're just turning it off.
Didn't land, they tried.
Okay, I see my mistake. I'm thinking of false flag in the context of starting a war. That's what I'm thinking of false flag, not just as an absolute. Like, meaning, it's one thing to blow up a pipeline and then blame the Ukrainians or blaming the Americans or blaming the Russians.
That's a false flag.
That's a false flag. It is. I'm thinking of it differently. I'm thinking of it in the context of starting a war. Like somebody does something and then blames somebody else in regards to go to war.
Like Bush didn't know 9/11 was going to happen, but once it did, he and his cronies were happy to take advantage of it.
Yes, in that case.
I mean, the Marco Polo Bridge incident could arguably be called the true start of World War II. That's a statement of fact.
Well, you mean the thing in Poland?
No, I mean, but the Japanese did in China when the Japanese army attacked the Japanese army to make it look like the Chinese did.
Well, World War II in Europe literally did begin with that.
It depends on when you start the war, right? Because the war started in Asia before it started in Europe.
Right.
Yeah, Robbie's right. Like they were fighting before.
Yeah, 1934, right?
Yeah. The Gulf of Tonkin. I mean, you could consider that a false flag.
There was no firing at all, right? So basically, that it didn't happen. The North Vietnamese did not fire at the United States.
I know, but we used it
But we used it, though.
We lied and claimed that they had. Exactly. So it's not a false flag. It's just a lie, right?
But this is essentially the difference, because what you're doing is that you're using a fake attack, whether it happened or not,
to trigger
a military response.
It is an attack. It's just that you wage it on your own people.
Yeah. I mean, the Marco Polo Bridge incident, or the one in Poland where the Germans attacked their own people and left a body behind.
Poland one is a classic. Yeah, and they filmed it and everything, and yeah. So, all right, here we go. Thoughts on AI pastors and priests from FUSO. South Korea has an AI robot ordained Buddhist monk.
Really? It's
blasphemous and sick. Stupid.
Wait. Let's think about it for a second. Like, I'm trying to process. I'm sorry. Maybe we're processing the flow. I'm like, whoa,
God created everything, and God created us and gave us the ability to create things. Then AI exists because God created either beings who created AI or created AI himself, which means AI
is
part of God's creation, right?
No, it's something that we made, because AI doesn't have agency. It's not sentient. We can't create life.
I know, but can't you fuse it with what, like for example, if I program a rocket and the rocket kills somebody, am I culpable for what the rocket did? Like, meaning if I program a flying killer robot and I give it metrics by which to kill somebody, am I the person who programmed it culpable for the deaths that the robot create? And I guess I'm asking something similar to the pastor. If I infuse my belief set into a machine that is very humanistic in the way that it comes across, like you've seen those AI women, you know, it's like, whoa, she's kind of hot, even though I know she's AI. Does it infuse it with anything that can do some good? Like, I hope you get my point, right? Like, is the person who programmed it infusing himself into the machine when the machine is going out and giving pastoral service? No. And doesn't that do more good from the perspective of the religion than worse, if indeed it's converting people to your cause?
I guess what's the difference, Robbie, between a person who programs an AI priest versus, for example, a cardinal in Spain dispatching priests and other emissaries to the New World to convert people to Christianity?
Right.
Because it's a matter of choice and agency. So, for example, if I build a AI system, I'm going to constrain it around certain rules. Like in this case, in South Korea, it's a Buddhist monk.
Right.
That AI cannot decide at one point, I want to be an atheist, or I want to become a Christian or a Catholic or whatever else. It's boxed in. It's constrained by the rules that it has been given at the time that it was built.
True.
So it has no agency. Whereas if I decide I want to be a missionary, then I, Robbie West, will then will sign up to become a missionary, go through the process, go travel around earning support from various churches, because that's something I choose to do, because it's a mission that I choose to follow.
But why does that matter? I don't know why it matters.
Because it's
for all intents and purposes, the person who made that AI made the choice. And he said, I want to convert more people to my belief set. Mm-hmm. So I'm creating this thing with my ideas of the world. And I'm sending it out in order to convert other people to my cause. Why does the thing need agency? He's not making a living being. He's not trying to. He's making a tool.
No, I understand the argument that you're making. Just if you're able to do this, and if you're able to go and advance a cause, wherever the cause may be, collect a car or a gun. Like, a gun is more efficient at killing than a bow and arrow or a crossbow.
Exactly.
So it's doing a certain job. The differences, though, between being a priest or an imam or a missionary or whatever else, is that you choose to do that. That's a choice that you make. Like, for example, if you go in and say, if I became a missionary and I wanted to go and serve, say, in South Sudan, there is a solid chance that I would suffer persecution, because I'm going to a place that's mixed faith, and that it's just it's a very turbulent thing. It's very tribal. There's a lot of ethnic and religious conflict that's going on there. But that's a choice that I make.
I know, but choices are for people, not machines.
I understand that, but you're asking me, can you be ordained to go on a mission from a higher power that a machine by definition cannot even believe in, because it's restrained by the code that its creator puts into it.
People who convert to, for example, Christianity, simply mm-hmm. by reading an inanimate object, the Bible.
Sure.
And I bet probably that book sitting in hotel rooms and mm-hmm. in jail cells and all around the world, library shelves being given away for free. I bet that book by itself has done more to convert people to Christianity than single thing.
Never made a choice.
But here's the difference, though, is that the Bible is how can I say this without sound like a complete moron, make people think that I really am superstitious. The Bible in its own way is alive because in the triune gods, you have the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Okay.
So we have the binding, we have the printing.
The Holy Spirit does the work. So that way, as you're reading, the Holy Spirit will help you learn. But now, honestly, do either one of y'all know what's required to be saved?
Wait, come on, Robbie.
Yeah, is there
really a difference between reading the Bible on the Kindle, which is a device, versus reading the book?
There is.
And I guess the next iteration of that be
or what about, AI? Or what about the Bible in Braille or the Bible as audio tape?
Well, I mean, it's just like the printing press would be a better argument for as a child are making.
Don't tell me that the audio tape Bible is considered like less holy than the printed version.
That's the same thing. The Word of God is the Word of God. It doesn't matter how it is that you hear it.
Right.
The difference is that,
issue with the AI. I guess from my point of view, the AI is the same thing.
So, for example, if I go,
the Bible is technology. In fact, it's famously technology. Okay. Right. It's that God. What's that famous Bible? The Gutenberg version. Yeah, Gutenberg is the first like mass
Bible. Yeah, the first mass produced Bible, the Gutenberg Bible.
Yeah.
The Catholic Church hated it because that's really what broke the back of the Catholic Church.
It would have never been Protestantism without it, right?
Correct. But now to answer your question, so here's one of the reasons, JT, why I'm going to say that this whole idea of an AI priest is a joke. You and me share something that's in common. We were both molested as children. If someone comes to me and they want to say, Robbie, how is it that you're a Christian? Or how is it that you're able to forgive your father when he was such an abusive asshole who broke your arm and beat the hell out of you? A robot cannot explain those things because a robot never experiences those things. A robot doesn't live those experiences and knows what it knows through its coding. But that's it. Like, no, I left home. I'm going to reveal something kind of private here. I left home when I was around 10 years old. And I was homeless for about 7 or 8 years, living out in the woods of North Florida and South Alabama, because if I did not leave, I was going to kill my father. It was one or the other. It was a binary choice. I was going to shoot that man on the couch, or I was going to leave. I opted to leave. During that time, my grandfather gave me a Bible. I read it. I didn't understand. I was a very angry young person. I still, to this day, I struggle with anger. It's built into me. When you live that way, that's something that's there. Robots do not have a testimony. Robots do not have an experience. Robots don't know anything except what they are told. Doesn't matter if it's AI or not. It is still a machine. There's nothing there. There's no lived experience. A robot cannot tell you that 12 years ago, a few years before my father died, I forgave him. That's one of the biggest miracles of my life. There's two miracles in my life that I can attest to. Forgiving my father, telling him, Dad, I love you, and God restoring that relationship and me being able to bring him to the Lord and him getting saved and him becoming my best friend before he died is one of the strongest proofs that Christianity is there. Forgiving someone who hurts you that way is not a natural act. That's a supernatural act. Because I hated that man to the point where I left home and I was eating garbage out of dumpsters and living out in the wintertime in South Alabama. It gets damn cold there. a machine cannot do that. I can, because I learned how to forgive, because the Holy Spirit gave me the ability to forgive him. No robot can ever do that. No machine can do that. That is a miracle of God.
Robbie.
That's answered your question.
I guess my point is, do you, a machine doesn't need a lived experience. It's a machine.
Sure does.
And I would also make the point of saying that—
How can the machine teach you?
Forgiveness doesn't require God. I'm just pointing it out. Look, I take nothing away from your experience. That is difficult to even put into context, right? And another human being often is not going to have that same lived experience that you've had. Meaning, even if you are dealing with a preacher, a priest, an imam, and you're having a conversation with that preacher, priest, or imam, they would have to somehow relate to you, despite the fact of not having the same lived experience.
And that's the, you just made my case, Jamal, because that machine doesn't have empathy.
Wait, but I'm not trying to make your case. I'm trying to point out that it's a tool. Like, it's not trying to take the place of a human being in the truest, fullest sense of the word. It is there like you're reading a book. It's there like if I had a Kindle, explain to me what I've just read in the Bible to get some level of solace. It's just the extension of that. It's not a person. Like, meaning, I don't infuse human qualities into it. Because what
you need to, because it's a human thing. For example,
why do you need to? I mean, the entire point of it is to explain, quote, the word of God.
I'm not sure you do. I mean, to me, it's like the best equivalent is maybe therapy, right? You don't know when you go see your therapist whether she's actually listening. She might be distracted, thinking about problems at home, money problems, whatever. You don't really know how present she is. I mean, she might be checked out and just going rotely saying like, oh, tell me about your mother. But that might be enough. That might be all you need, really. It's like, in other words, you don't need to, she doesn't really have to be, she can be a robot. In fact, there are, you know, robot therapists now, right? She can be a robot and you can be, but as long as it works for you, I mean,
can it cry with you?
That's an interesting.
Can it show empathy? Can it?
Well, that's the thing. For therapists, I think it's more interesting because
this is fascinating.
Is it just about
the quest for the real? Is what this is about? And I think, Robbie, you. I mean, it's one of the best things about you is that you are real and you go and you search for the real. And then I think the error that one can make is to think that everybody needs the real, maybe. Not everyone needs the real.
But the real is always going to be superior to the copy.
Why
settle for a counterfeit if you can have the real thing?
It depends on what the counterfeit is. And it depends on what the real thing is.
If the real is not available. It's sort of like, you know, like someone who gets the girlfriend experience from a prostitute, that or no sex at all.
Or from a sex robot. I get what you're saying.
But sex robot wouldn't work for me, I need real.
But what I'm saying is that at the end of the day, it's a lie and it's a counterfeit. For example, I could talk to a chatbot and pretend that chatbot is my friend. And I could put myself into a delusion where I think that this thing that does not know me from Adam, by definition, it cannot. All I am to it is a number. And I'm a piece of code in a JSON file. That's all I am. That's it. That JSON file goes away. Everything that it knows about me goes away. And those JSON files expire over time. RAM's not infinite, right? Whereas I could have a relationship with Ted Rall or Jamarl Thomas or someone else who my circle of friends is very, very small. I don't let very many people in. Very, very few. I could pick up the phone right now and I could call Ted and I could spill my guts to him. And Ted is an atheist. I've done this before. He's like, Ted, please pray for me. Because he's my friend. That AI robot, that machine that's masquerading to be something that it can never, ever be, which is a human being with agency, with heart, a soul, emotions. All that is a gimmick. Whereas I can call my dear friend and say, Ted, I'm having a really hard time here. Please pray for me.
I can't.
That's why a machine can never be a priest.
Guys, we have more questions to get to, and we're already 6 minutes over. I think
this is important.
By the way, I accept that part. I mean, I accept this idea that, look, this thing, there's nothing behind this thing. I mean,
then you accept my argument because it's a counterfeit.
But I guess I'm saying, nope, but it's not masquerading as Ted Raw. It's not masquerading as a person.
No, it's playing a role. It is what it is. It's a tool. It's playing a role. It was built to be a counterfeit. Just like a counterfeit $100 bill. It's not a real $100 bill. That machine's not a real priest. It's not a real person. It doesn't have agency. It doesn't have a soul.
It's a great example. About 5% of all $100 bills in circulation are counterfeit. And that's okay because they spend the same and the economy allows for it and it doesn't matter. There literally is no difference.
It's what you need in the moment. It may not be a full priest. That's kind of what I'm saying, Robbie. It's not that I disagree with you in the sense of this thing is not going to embody the fullness of a person. It's just not. It can't, right?
You asked if it could be a priest, and I said,
and by the way, a cognitive issue. And the reason why I said the sex robot thing wouldn't work is because for me, I need to know or have the idea in my mind of what's going on in this other person's mind. That is the thing that turns me on. I know that sounds weird, but it's true. It's my perception of what I think is going on in a person's head that is the turn on to me. And so I get it. There are some things that you need this kind of real experience just because of the quirk of being a human being. If I'm talking to somebody, I want to know that the person can acknowledge what the fuck I just said to the person. Otherwise, what's the point? Which is kind of goes to the whole ChatGPT. But if I know that tool is just a tool, and I'm using that tool for the perspective or for the point of it being what it is, meaning I just need to hear the word of God. And maybe I don't want to read the book. Maybe I don't want to go to my Kindle.
But you'll have to read the book. You can listen to someone else because preaching means speaking. You don't need to read the Bible to get saved. You just need to have someone just to tell you. That's all it's taking. That's literally all it takes.
A tool that calls itself a priest and tells you maybe that's enough.
Guys, we got to move on.
It is not enough.
We got to move on. Okay.
Okay. Right. Okay.
Jack Samuels. Let's run through these and then we will call it a day. Jack Samuels, where will Trump rank in the future among presidents? I'm going to say in the bottom three, not necessarily the worst, but in the bottom three. I mean, you got to
think it's worse.
Franklin Pierce and James Buchanan have to be
Ulysses Grant
down there.
Ulysses Grant's probably the bottom three. I would put Trump like the bottom, like number four from worst.
Trump at the bottom. He's going to preside over the end of this country, or at the very least.
Buchanan presided over the end of the country, basically.
Yeah, he destroyed the Republic.
Yeah, he did. Maybe Bluth Funk, thanks for the $5. How do you think American parents will respond to the rollout of the Melania-sponsored robot teacher? The robots they want to use instead of humans. We're not having another of those conversations, but I don't think American parents will like it, but I think they're going to be far more accepting of it than Christians would be of the robo-priest.
Yeah, pretty much.
I would be all in favor of putting a round that robo-priest said. Maybe a well-placed EMP.
I'm in favor of that only if I can see it live. Okay. Yes. Peter, do you think Lansky's grandchildren will get back the Hotel Nacional when we overthrow Cuba, aka returning back to the Batista days? And last, unless there's more, Robbie, Sam Palmizo Mo, thanks so much for the $20. Wasn't the Gulf of Tonkin attack on the USS Liberty a false flag to go to war in Vietnam?
Yes.
Israel attacks the US ship as a false flag. It was
Liberty.
It was
Liberty was a false flag. It failed.
Yeah, that was a false flag.
No, I mean, but we knew Israel attacked us.
But the thing is that the Israelis, they were trying to sink the ship so make it look like the Egyptians did it. The problem is the ship wouldn't say
that. I'm saying the Americans who were on that ship knew that it was the Israelis that attacked them. The government basically tried to quiet them and mm-hmm. shut them up and basically paid them off and everything else to basically don't bring up the fact that it was the Israelis that
didn't pay them off. I actually met a couple of Liberty veterans before, talked to them, and they were actually given gag orders, said if you talk about this, we will destroy your careers.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. They were not paid off.
But they gave them money and everything else. Basically, you need mm-hmm. to shut up. Don't say anything about this. Be quiet. You know.
No, they were given gag orders. Said if you speak about this, we will charge you with the Espionage Act, and you will go to prison for the rest of your life. You'll never see your grandkids.
Disgusting.
That is,
guys. Disgusting. Thanks so much for doing the Q&A. Thanks everyone for your amazing support throughout the Q&A today. We'll be doing the next one, not Monday, because Monday is Memorial Day, but we'll be doing Wednesday of next week, 1 week from today, 12 noon. In the meantime, regular D program tomorrow morning, Thursday at 9 a.m. Eastern time, also Friday, not Monday, TMI, 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. Oh, also DMZ, 11 o'clock tomorrow morning. Watch JT's own show, his personal show, 7 to 9 a.m. Eastern time, Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. tomorrow. So you have the whole, you can go with JT and I from 7 to noon tomorrow. God, why would you want to? I have no idea. I don't even want to be with me from 7 to noon tomorrow. But anyway, there we go. Anything else you guys want to say before I hit the button?
I have a doctor's appointment first thing in the morning tomorrow that I can't miss. It's doing... I'm still getting exams for the eye to figure out the cause of the blindness and everything else.
Oh, okay.
So tomorrow, but I'll be back on Friday.
Oh, so okay. You're out tomorrow? Okay.
I'm off tomorrow, even on my own show. I'm going to be gone all day. Well, I don't know.
I'll cover for you.
By the way, Robbie. What happens on Monday? Maybe I'm missing something.
It's Decoration Day.
What's Decoration Day?
Memorial Day.
Oh, Memorial. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, for those not down with the war of Northern aggression.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Sorry. Jesus. Okay.
Okay. All right. And with that, we go. Bye.
Bye, y'all. Go ahead.